Assalamualaikum. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. All praises are Allah's, Lord of the worlds, and may His peace and blessings be upon our Master, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and His pure, immaculate Ahlul Bayt. So this is the last of the series of talks. I want to thank everyone for the very warm environment that they have led to every night, and I'm very grateful for their patience. I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me here, and also I would like to thank Sayyid Mehdi Alai and his respected family for the hospitality has shown for the last few nights. We were speaking about Sufism or Irfan, and we had gone through some of the practical dimensions of it. And today, inshallah, we'll cover a few of the Sufi perspectives in relation to the articles of faith, in relation to aqa'id. Because the perspective they have in relation to the articles of faith is slightly different to that which the theologians have. One of the prime differences is that with some of the perspectives that the theologians have in relation to different articles of faith, they're putting religion on credit. Everything will happen one day. Death, barzakh, heaven, hell, the questioning of the angels, sirat, the coming of the Mahdi, raj'at. All these things will happen one day. Whereas, as we shall see, inshallah, tonight, with the Sufis and the Urafa, they want to teach religion in a manner that all these articles of faith are accessible right now in this world, moment to moment. Be it death, be it barzakh, be it the questioning of the angels, be it the sirat, and so on and so forth. So I'll go through them one by one, inshallah, and we'll see how far we can go with this. First is the concept of death. Is it something only for the aged, or are there practical implications involved with death for us today, irrespective of our age? Do we see death as something happening after 80, 90, or 100 years? Or is dying of spiritual value, even for someone at 20, 30, or 40 years of age? We have to see what the difference between spiritual and physical death is. In one domain, death is something that will happen. In one domain, we have to die moment after moment. What's the difference here? But before I go into that difference, let's just a few words on death itself. There are two types of death that we have in Islam. One is a natural death, and one is a forced death, where death is forced upon you. In the natural death, what happens is that the soul becomes independent from the body, from the physical body. Why does the soul become independent from the physical body? Because the soul has reached perfection. And the soul can no longer acquire more perfection with this physical body, and therefore it leaves it. It disassociates with it, and that we call natural death. It becomes perfect. It reaches a degree of perfection that it no longer can acquire more perfection with this physical body, it leaves it. And that we call natural death. Now this applies to the believers and to the non-believers. With the believers, it's when they reach perfection in virtue and they can no longer perform more virtue with this physical body, the soul leaves. The soul becomes independent from the physical body now. It leaves this physical realm. It still has a body, but now the body is in the realm of Barzakh. It's a Barzakhi body. The body is the same, but it's in a different realm. Whereas with the non-believers, they also acquire perfection, but not in virtue, in vice rather. They commit such evil and they reach a level of perfection, of evil, that they can no longer perform more evil or more vice with this physical body, and they become independent from the physical body, they die a natural death. So the process applies to both. Now I'm going to support all these with traditions later. So that's one difference. However, with forced death, that's something else now. Now that forced death is what happens to me and you usually. Forced death can be divided into two, where we force death upon ourselves or others force death upon us. In relation to the latter, it's like being martyred, for example, where someone's killed us, we've become martyred. They did something to our bodies that the soul could no longer, the bodies can no longer, you know, bear the soul. And that's what happened with the Imams and with most of the Ma'sumin. Ma'sumin in the broader sense. In relation to the 14 infallibles, they all were martyred. لَيْسَ مِنَّا إِلَّا مَقْتُولٌ أَوْ مَسْمُورٌ Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, we, the 14 Ma'sumin, we were either all killed or poisoned. If they weren't killed, if they weren't poisoned, they would have lived forever. The concept of immortality is theoretically possible in Islam. But since we have traditions and verses of the Quran saying there's going to be a physical resurrection one day, everyone will die, in that aspect we say okay. Otherwise, physical immortality is possible, theoretically. But then there's a forced death which we force death upon ourselves. That's because of our sins and our lifestyle. Now this applies to the believers, not to the non-believers. The non-believers, they have forced death when their lifestyle forces them to die. If the non-believers sin, that's going to decrease their life expectancy. But with the believers, it's sins which can lower their life expectancy and their lifestyle. They smoke or eat in such a manner that will lead to their death eventually. In the same way that some actions can prolong one's life, some actions can lower one's life. But in any case, that's forced death. Just wanted to clarify the different types of death. We're coming to a tradition later, inshallah. Now, what some people look at death as something physical alone. It will happen after 80, 90, 100 years. But the Urafa'u, they see death as something spiritual that should happen day after day. Mutu qabla an tamutu. Die, the Holy Prophet said, a spiritual death before you undergo the physical death. See, both types of death, the two deaths here are different. They have to be different. Otherwise, it won't make any sense. Die a physical death before you die a physical death. Die a spiritual death before you undergo that physical death at 80, 90, 100 years of age, whilst you're young and competent, die spiritually. Death meaning that transition from one realm to a higher realm. We want to see beyond. Does he see the knowledge of the unseen? Is the knowledge of the unseen before him so that he sees? We want to see, because that kind of seeing elevates the soul. However, man kana fi hadhi a'ma fa huwa fil akhirah a'ma. However, if you never see, if you're going to be blind in this world and only see like what animals see with the physical eye, and never die and ascend and see some truths, everyone to their own capacity, but you're going to be blind in the hereafter. Do you have the take on death? Look at the difference between it. How one is something which would just happen one day, but one is soul elevating. Then Islam brings another tradition from one of the Imams, a code, and naumo achol maut. Sleep is the brother of death. Now this sleep, is it referring to that the way the animals also sleep, that biological sleep? What is it that sleep has in common with death? The answer is mi'raj, ascending. But with sleep it's easier, because with sleeping we automatically detach from the worldly life and we ascend, be you Muslim or non-Muslim. See, Islam has given a number of instructions before sleeping to prepare you for the mi'raj in your sleep. And naumo akhul maut, the brother of death. Here, that death is spiritual death. This is an opportunity Allah has given to us to experience what's beyond, to see the truths. Detachment from the worldly life leads you to ascend. Some people do it through sleep. Some people, whilst awake, can detach themselves from the worldly life. Some people, when they were children, may have been abused in some way or form. They were so burdened, they become detached from the worldly life. Then they see things. Some people may undergo hypnosis, detached from the worldly life, they see things in the past and the future. Some people may take hallucinatory drugs, they become detached from the worldly life, they see things. It's all the same mechanism. But the most safe way of detaching from the worldly life is through the Sharia and then the Tariqah. If you do it because you were abused or through other means, you're exposed to risk. You may abuse it. But if you acquire that detachment from the worldly life through the Sharia and the Tariqah, you're safe. People will be safe. You won't abuse people. You've detached how you should detach from the worldly life. Then we come to Barzakh. What's Barzakh? Either are we going to say it's something which happens after death, putting religion on credit again? Or is it something we want to see? Or is Barzakh existing right now? Well, the answer is Barzakh exists right now, because the human being is an extended creature with an earthly dimension, two immaterial dimensions. You, I, man, the essence of man, is an extended creature, is multidimensional. One dimension is this physical dimension we have in this physical realm. With every realm, we have a body on a par with that realm. They're all dimensions of the soul. Barzakh is a dimension of the soul. Barzakh is a dimension of you. And then when you die, you automatically become detached from the worldly life again. You enter Barzakh. And there's you, the I, and there's also a body, but it's not physical this time. It's the same body which was in this world, which was physical. But now it's in Barzakh, it's a mithali body, it's semi-immaterial. And for most people, that happens after death. But we want to acquire it whilst in this world. عِنْدَهُ إِلْمُ الْغَيْبِ فَهُوَ يَرَى. We want to see beyond. Not just be blind for 80, 90 years. Barzakh is to be acquired right now. Barzakh is in our hands, action to action. We're building that dimension of the soul, that infinite dimension of the soul, which is a dimension of you. My Barzakh is different to yours, different to yours, different to yours. We're creating our Barzakh moment to moment in this world. And when we die, those actions that we incorporated within our souls become embodied in semi-immaterial truths. Those actions, they build your Barzakh. If they were good actions, your Barzakh is good. If they were bad actions, it'll be bad. After Barzakh, there's more immaterial realms, heaven and hell. The difference is in Barzakh, it's a very general, it's a transitory phase to heaven and hell, where your actions in general are monitored. Your general actions will be embodied. How did you do salat in general, fasting in general, and so on and so forth. Whereas in the Qiyamah now, since it's more refined, more immaterial, it's how did you do X salat on Y day with Z clothing in A place, in B, with B person, and so on and so forth. It becomes very exact, precise. But Barzakh is a transitory phase, so we become familiar with that more immaterial, refined realm, which is also a dimension of the soul. Ad-dunya mazra'atul akhirah, it's all to be acquired here. Don't put your hopes too high for after death. Elevation of the soul after death, it's a very, very long process. It's not that easy like we can elevate in this world. Everything has to be acquired here for us to take there. That's not to say those who have passed away can't elevate. But it's a very, very lengthy process. In order to elevate, we need a physical body to do salat, to do fasting. There's no physical matter in Barzakh. So what does elevation of Barzakh mean? Elevation of the soul in Barzakh. Because there's no physical body there, so how is the soul elevating? Albeit at a very slow pace. Those who have passed away amongst our friends and family, may Allah enlighten all their souls. What's their condition like? Well, it's how their actions went this well. Can they elevate? Yes. It's still possible. How? Because they don't have a physical body. But they have some dependency on the physical world. They have children. They have righteous legacies. Baghiyatu Sadahat. As long as there are children who are righteous and who pray for their parents, for example, the hospital which they helped, the masjid which they helped, as long as they remain and they have that affinity towards their righteous legacies and their children who are praying and so on and so forth, there is some form of elevation. It's not dramatic though. Then in Barzakh, the traditions speak, there are iron rods which are piercing the body in Barzakh. Or the milk that you drank when you were an infant will be sucked from your brain. Now, no one says Barzakh is physical. So what are these iron rods then? See, be rest assured, if you open the grave now, if you go to any cemetery, the corpse is there. There's no iron rods. There's no scorpions. There's no snakes. There's no milk being sucked out. There's no talking going on. See, these are important. We have to... You can't interpret these traditions physically, but since we're so drowned in the physical world, we interpret many traditions physically. And then some Muslims even say, Yadullah, yes, God has a hand. It's a physical hand. It's not like our physical hand, but there is a hand. But even amongst some sects, some people of other denominations, even you see that Barzakh, heaven, hell, they keep on interpreting it physically. It's difficult. One has to be careful. Alome Tabotabe called this kind of interpreting Tafsir Berai. Barzakh, everyone says it's immaterial, semi-immaterial. There's no physical matter, but there are bodies, like in your dreams. There's no physical matter in your dreams, but you eat, you drink. There are bodies there. Now, sometimes dreams are a construct of your brain. Your brain are producing them. That's not of any value. You are so occupied in the worldly life that when you sleep, then you see your brain just playing around with all these pictures that, because you are so occupied in this world. But those who detach themselves during the day and fill their hearts with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from action to action, they went to work, they ate, they had children, played with children, they had wives, they did everything, they watched television, and so on and so on. But it was all done Allahfully. These people have detached from the world in life, even though they're occupied and they do all things. But there was no affinity to the world in life. It was all done Allahfully. These people, they will acquire access to their barzakhi soul. It's not just a construct of the brain anymore, it's beyond that. And they can benefit. Okay. Then we come to the concept of questioning of angels. What are angels? Here, Sheikh Tusi was one of the very strong scholars of the earlier centuries. He said Iblis was an angel, was a malak. Now some people suddenly attacked him and said, but the Quran says Kana min al-jinn. Iblis was one of the jinns. Don't you think Sheikh Tusi of all people would have seen that verse? You see, we have to when you hear scholars saying things, strong scholars, not like people like me, but very important, significant scholars speak, just listen. Stop criticizing. Stop questioning. Listen. Silence is important. It's through silence that you will be inspired. You'll receive inspiration through silence. But those who are always mentally occupied, they keep on speaking or doing this, doing that. There's no rest. It's difficult for these people to grow. When scholars say, these high scholars say something, just listen to what they have to say, and things will come and fall into place. So, why is Iblis one of the Malaike? Here, we have to see what the literal definition of Malaike is. What's the literal root of the word Malaike? Instead of automatically going to the technical definition of malaike, which are angels, when you go to the literal root, logatan, you see it comes from uluka, power. There, whatever has power, be it an insan, a jinn, or an angel, becomes part of the malaike. So these are things that we have to investigate more. It's one perspective. I'm not saying this is it. But what are angels? This has to be understood. Then when angels speak, were they physical voices? Or were they non-physical voices? When Jibreel would speak to the Holy Messenger, if we were there, we wouldn't be able to hear. So it can't be the physical ear hearing the voice of Jibreel. فَتَمَثَّلَ لَهَا بَشَرًا سَوِيًّا. Archangel Gabriel appeared لَهَا in unity with Lady Maryam as a well-proportioned human being. If we were there, we wouldn't have seen anything. She ascended to immaterial realms, received Allah's knowledge. Her soul converted that knowledge to pictures. One was Jibreel as a well-proportioned human being speaking. Like in dreams, if I dream, the person beside me won't be seeing what I'm dreaming because the dream's a product of my soul. Lady Maryam was awake and she had these visions whilst awake, and she would see, but not with the physical eye, with the same eye that we see in our dreams, but she was awake. Detachment from the worldly life, communication through Allah will result, through angels. So what form does this questioning take when we speak of the questioning of the angels? What is this questioning? They speak of two angels, Nakir and Munkar. Man Rabbuk, Ma Dinuk, who's your Lord? What's your religion? And so on and so forth. If a million people were to die at the same time, they would all see Nakir and Munkar. So they can't be physical then. Because if they were physical, then they would be different to one another. They can't be the same. These are immaterial realities, semi-immaterial realities. The shape, the size, but there's no physical matter. This questioning of the angels, those angels also are an embodiment of your actions. There's no physical voice asking you anything. Now, Sheikh Mufid has said this, and also Fiz Kashani. Fiz Kashani has spoken this way. إِنَّ الْمُنْكَرَ إِبَارَةٌ Munkar, that angel that we call Munkar, who will question, is defined as إِبَارَةٌ أَنْ جُمْلَةِ الْأَعْمَالِ الْمُنْكَرَ is defined as the collective sum of your Munkar actions. The angel Munkar, who will question you, is a collective sum of your vice, your evil actions. Allati fa'alaha al-insan fi dunya. Those actions, those vicious actions, those evil actions, that insan, man, did in this world. Ad-dunya mazra'atul akhirah. Then he says, fatamathalat fil akhirah bisuratin munasabatin laha. Laha again here. He says, then those actions will appear as visions or apparitions on a par with those actions. They will appear in unity with that person. If you would sting people, hurt people, it'll appear as snakes. If you steal, you'll see mice in your dreams. When you see mice, when you see snakes, it's you. It's a dimension of yourself you're seeing. When you see different animals, the shark is coming towards you, or this or that, it's all a dimension of you, something outside you. What have you been doing during the day? And some people see good things. It all depends on your actions. And then it will tamathalat bisurat al-munasabah. Will appear on a par with what those actions were. And that's the pressure of the grave. The pressure of the grave isn't a physical squeezing of the corpse. Be rest assured, go and open all the graves. The corpse is there, nothing is squeezed physically. But if the eye is in association with a snake, predators, all these things, the eye is going to suffer. Joy and pain are attributes of the eye, not of the body. The eye, the essence of what we are, the spirit is suffering. Because now the spirit, the body, which is in association with the spirit, is now a predator, not one or two. How much have you acted evilly? That's going to be horrible. You can't even bear it. In our sleep, when a shark attacks, we wake up. Or if a wolf attacks, we wake up. Or if a dog attacks, we wake up. There's no waking up there. In the same way that pain is much worse in the semi-immaterial realm than in the physical realm, joy is much better, is much more perfect in the semi-immaterial realm than in the physical realm. Then we speak about the Sirat, the bridge. Is it a physical bridge? Is it the same bridge for all? Some people say it's a bridge. They say it's physical, and we'll see it one day. But what if I have a different outlook on this again? They don't see the bridge as outside the soul. It's within you. You are the bridge. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu alaykum anfusakum. Observe your souls. You who have faith, observe your souls. Be careful. Observe it. Go on the straight path. La yadurrukum man dhalla idha tadaytum. One who strays can't hurt you if you are guided. If you are guided. Alaykum anfusakum, observe your souls. If you are guided, no one can hurt you. The Sirat is within. And in chapter 5, verse 105, in Al-Mizan, Allama Tabatabai refers to this verse. Now there's one tradition I want to go through, which covers most of the points we've mentioned. I think most of you have heard this tradition, and if you've heard it from me, I apologize for repeating this again. If you haven't, there may be some dimensions you hadn't paid attention to. Innahu kana qa'idan ma'a ashabihi fil masjid. The Holy Prophet was sitting in the mosque one day with his companions. Fasami'u haddatan adhima. Then the companions, they heard a loud, mighty sound. Fartahu, they all got scared. Faqala ata'rifuna ma hadha al-hadda. The Holy Prophet said, do you know what this sound was? Already, from the terminology here, the terms used, you can hint that it's not a physical sound here. Do you know what that sound was? The Holy Prophet said to the companions, "Qalu Allah wa Rasuluhu a'lam." Allah knows. The Holy, his messenger knows. They had no idea. It wasn't something they've heard before. It wasn't a physical sound. Qala, the Holy Prophet said, "Hijron." It was a stone. Ulqiya min a'la jahannam. Mondo Sabaina Sana. It was a stone thrown from the top of hell 70 years ago. Walana Wasala Elo Qareha. Right now it reached its bottom. Now is this hell something physical? That they can go and see the stone? Of course not. فَكَانَ مِنْ وُسُولِهِ إِلَىٰ قَعْرِهَا وَسُقُوتِهِ فِيهَا هَذِهِ الْحَدَّ. And this sound was its going down and reaching the bottom of hell. Then the tradition continues. فَمَا فَرَغَ مِنْ كَلَامِهِ. Just as the words of the Holy Prophet had come to an end. إِلَّا وَالصُّرَاخُ فِي دَارِ مُنَافِقْ مِنَ الْمُنَافِقِينَ. At the same time, there were cries and lamentations heard from the house of one of the hypocrites, non-believers. Qad mata, that hypocrite had died. Wa kana umruhu sab'ina sana. Actually, his life was of 70 years of age. Faqala, the Holy Messenger said, Allahu Akbar. فَعَلِمَتْ الْعُلَمَاءُ السَّحَابَةِ. The ulama. Ulama isn't the plural of alim. The plural of alim is alimun or alimin, and we have these words in the Quran. Ulama is the plural of alim, and you don't have to be a seminary student to be alim. Anyone can be alim, and not all seminary students are alim, and some non-seminary students are alim, but ulama, they're alim, they have gnosis of the truth, gnosis with a G. Those who were amongst the ulama of the companions, they knew, they acknowledged that أن هذا الحجر هو ذلك المنافق, that the stone was the منافق, the stone was the hypocrite. I'll explain this in a minute. وَأَنَّهُ مُنْذُ خَلَقَهُ اللَّهُ تَعَالَى, and since Allah created him from birth, يَهْوِي فِي جَهَنَّمْ, he was in hell. These have to be explained. I'll come to all of them in a minute. Since creation, he was in hell. وَبَلَغَ أُمْرُهُ, now see, this hell can't be something physical, because we know where he was from birth. وَبَلَغَ أُمْرُهُ سَبَعِينَ سَنَةً, and his age reached 70 years. فَلَمَّا مَاتَ حَسَلَ فِي قَعْرَهُ, and he died when he reached the bottom of hell. Now let's go through these points, it's important here. When he reached the bottom, he died. Remember that classification of death. When the soul has reached perfection in vice, and no longer can acquire more perfection in vice, the soul will disassociate with the body, and one will die. Here, he reached the bottom. His bottom was reached, he died. He couldn't perform more perfection in vice, in evil. تجسم الأعمال, embodiment of one's actions. Remember, هذا الحجر هو ذلك المنافق. The munafiq was the stone. The stone was the munafiq. Embodiment of one's actions. Just like a stone that never evolves. The lack of that spiritual evolution of the soul of the munafiq. All his life he never evolved spiritually. He will be embodied as a stone after death. Even before death, but he doesn't see it. But after death he'll see it. And that's going to be painful. Why was the munafiq always in hell since he was created by Allah? The nafsul ammare, the soul that commands one to evil. The soul is one, but depending on its status quo, it's given different names. Sometimes it's called Ammara bis-soul, Lawame, Mutma'inna, and so on and so forth. It's one soul though. We don't have three souls. Depending on its status quo, Allah's given different names to it. At 4 months gestation in the mother's womb, when the eye arises, the spirit, the nafsul ammara arises too. And until puberty with children, that nafsul ammara, that soul which commands them to do, you know, bad things when they're children. Sometimes we have it in English. Say, oh, you little devil, for example, you did that. Until puberty, it's harmless. Even if they sin, it's harmless to them. They are in hell, but that's harmless for them. But after puberty, if they continue their ways, it won't be harmless. It'll be harmful if they act against the Sharia. This munafiq, okay, like me and you, we was residing in hell, but that a harmless hell, nothing serious. But after puberty, where we follow the Sharia, this munafiq continued. So he was always in hell, albeit that initial hell not being harmful. And finally, if we were there, we may not have heard that sound. That sound was an apparition. It wasn't heard with the physical ear. And here the Holy Prophet allowed them to hear this with his wilayatut takwin, his providential authority that he had over the cosmos, in order for them to take lesson. Okay. Going back to the aqa'id, different articles of faith. Next is heaven and hell. Where is it? Is it a place? Is it physical or not? Can it be acquired before physical death? As I said, man is an extended creature with an earthly dimension, two immaterial dimensions. Heaven and hell, dimensions of the soul. It's not outside you. It's the dimension of you. You're creating your heaven and hell from action to action right now. Don't look at it being outside you, a place where it's physical and there's a red monster waiting to whip you or burn you. Why should they whip you or burn you? And then you say to the child, for example, who asks, why should there be such a devil with the horns and everything, whipping us, burning us? You say, because God wants so. You did bad actions. God punished you. It's nothing to do with Allah. What kind of a God is that? There's no reason why God should punish anyone. Look at the reasons why man punishes man. None of those qualify in relation to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He doesn't get angry. It's not for educational purposes because that's the end of the road. There's no reason why he should punish. Rather, you've punished yourself. Tajassum al-a'mal, embodiment of one's actions. You polluted the soul by not praying, by drinking alcohol, by being bad to your neighbors, by being bad to your parents, by swearing. You're polluting yourself. You take drugs, you're polluting the soul. You drink alcohol, you're polluting the soul. Life is like a film. You're the director of this film. At the end, we're going to see the quality of this film. But you're the director. Action to action, this world, you're building your heaven or hell. It's a dimension of you and you'll see it. But there's no one waiting to burn you. And then you say, so why are you burning me? Because we want you to go to heaven afterwards, cleanse you. Well, okay, I don't want to go to heaven, so stop the burning. Whereas if you do all these sins, it's a dimension of yourself you've built. You can't be separate from it. If you remember chapter 3, verse 31. Tawaddu lo anna baynahu wa baynahu, I can't remember exactly, amadan ba'ida. If only there was a distance between me and those evil actions, that impossible if. You can't be separate from yourselves. You are your actions. There are two stories here, if I mention them. Once Amir al-Mu'mineen was returning from one of the wars with his companions, he saw a skull on the side of the road. He told one of his companions to bring the skull, and he brought it, and it's in Amir al-Mu'mineen's hands now. He said, who are you to the skull? The skull was physical in the hands of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Then they all heard a sound, a reply. I mean, the skull wasn't speaking, it wasn't even moving, but they all heard the person who used to have that skull when they were alive, who is now in hell. He said, I am one of the kings of Persia. And for me to come into power, I had to do this action, that action, kill this many people, do that many things. And right now, I am being burnt and bitten by scorpions and this and that right now, moment to moment. See, heaven and hell exist right now. Whenever we die, Barzakh starts for you. Then you go to heaven or hell, depending on your actions. But it exists right now. It's not as if one day it will happen. That one day is a physical resurrection. Yes, one day events will happen in relation to the earth. It won't get destroyed, but there are events, Idh al-Bihar or Fujirat and so on and so forth, when the seas merge and so on. Yes, this is a reality. And it has a lot of important meanings. We don't have the time here. I've spoken about it elsewhere. But spiritual resurrection, spiritual qiyamah, it starts after death. Many people are in hell right now. They're in heaven right now. Some are in their barzakhs right now. In another tradition, this is in Usul al-Kafi, or in Rawzat al-Kafi rather, sorry. Here, one of the earlier prophets, in those days there were no dreams according to this tradition. There was no dreams. And the prophet would come and speak about heaven and hell to the people. So they'd take lesson from heaven and hell. And they wouldn't listen. Then Allah allowed them to start this process of dreaming. And then when it first started, they went to the prophet and said, we explained the dreams. We saw these things. It wasn't physical. And so on and so forth. During our sleep. And the prophet said, this is heaven and hell. Indirectly referring to that immaterial reality rather than it being something physical place. It's a different set of laws governing heaven and hell than the laws of nature governing this physical realm. It's different. It's a yawm al-akhir. It's another realm. It's another manifestation. But since we're drowned in this physical realm, we'll interpret it like that. Although, it doesn't matter. Many theologians accept that. It's some heaven and hell will be physical. And if you believe that, there's nothing wrong. It's okay. I'm just giving the Sufi perspective here. I'm not saying this is right or that's wrong, but it has connotations. It has its differences. It's important. Oh, it is important to understand. You need to believe in it. If you just believe in something without understanding nothing, if you understand nothing and say, I believe in that kind of hell, that's not going to be of any use to you. Aqaid has to be understood for the soul to elevate. Then we come to the Mi'raj. Now, some people speak of it, angels coming, a physical angel coming and knocking on the door, and calling the Holy Messenger, come, let's go on this donkey and let's go up physically. As if going up physically has any value. Those who go up with Apollo, for example, do they become holy people? Any value going up? Does history ever recall the Holy Prophet having a donkey called Buraq? See, these things, we keep on interpreting them physically. Now, from Masjid al-Haram to Masjid al-Aqsa, it's okay if we say it was a physical experience. There's no impediment because it's rationally possible. But when the Holy Prophet is traveling through the heavens, a journey of the soul, realms which the matter doesn't even exist, there's no physical reality there. He's journeying into the heavens now. There's no insistence upon the fact that that had to be physical too. There was a physical tree right at the top of the heavens. Come on. See? Although some of the Urafa also accept even the horizontal mi'raj, from Masjid al-Haram to Masjid al-Aqsa, they didn't accept that either. Then all the prophets came and prayed behind the Holy Prophet. If you look at that, if you take that to be a physical reality, Allama Tabatabai says, but they've passed away. Referring to the fact that if they were to come in the physical form, it'll be reincarnation that you're saying. You see? This is the problem. There are many things in aqaid. If you don't endeavor to understand and just say because he said so, that other, you would be believing in reincarnation if you don't be careful, without knowing it. Although we don't have time to go into reincarnation, but these things I have spoken about here. I'm just referring to them. Chapter 43. Verse 45, Was'al man arsalna min qablika min rusulina. To the Holy Prophet in relation to the Mi'raj, ask those that we have sent before you amongst the messengers. ask, but they've all passed away. Who is he asking? Allow me to tell you what I was saying. Yes, the Prophet did see all the messengers, but they were all barzakhi visions. They were all tamathulatun barzakhiya, all of them. There was no physical reality there. What does that mean? Look at the other traditions, opens the code to open the meaning of other traditions. And nadaru ila wajhi Ali ibadatun, seeing the face of Ali is ibadah. Well, the munafiqeen would see Ali every day. Was that ibadah? And was it only limited when the physical Ali alayhi salam was alive? Or can we see Amirul Mu'mineen today? فَتَمَثَّلَ لَهَا بَشَرًا سَوِيًّا. In the same way Lady Maryam saw Archangel Gabriel, product of the soul, product of her spiritual ascension. She saw Archangel Gabriel. Amirul Mu'mineen is higher than Archangel Gabriel. His spirit is freer, we can see them too. Then here then, Mahdawiyat becomes different. Some people limit Mahdawiyat, one day it will happen. Well, it may take 100,000 years from now. No, there's no impediment to that. All these playing of the signs, it's a mockery of religion. Every 50 years, the same signs are used. Oh, we're looking at Syria, what's happening in Syria now? And they say Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah is this, Ayatollah Khomeini is that. He's not playing with religion. Imam in one of his works said he may come in 100,000. His coming is definite, it's a physical coming. It may come in 100,000 years' time. He has this in one of his works, 100,000 years' time. Are you just going to lie waiting? Are you going to die in 70 years? So what does intidhar mean? How are you going to await? You see, these are meanings we have to understand. No, we also believe we can see the Mahdi. Not necessarily the physical Mahdi. That's of no benefit if we were to see the physical Mahdi. If you're a thief, you're going to remain a thief on seeing the physical. But we want to see the tamathulat. We want to see the Mahdi. We want to see Amirul Mu'mineen as a result, a product of the soul, as a result of our mi'raj. Whilst awake. Not with the physical eye though. These things have to be explored. See, all I'm only saying these for you to appreciate. And the younger you are, the better. That there are many deep layers in religion. It's not a straightforward thing. It's multidimensional. And there are many other things one can say, but for in Tawheed we have to. I don't want to go too on. Yes, okay. It's attributed to Plato and Platon that he said la yakuno muwahhidun muwahhida, the monotheist won't be a true monotheist until ma lam yaqul alfa siddiq innahu zindiq, until 1,000 friends of his don't say he's a kafir. A monotheist won't be a true monotheist. The monotheist sees Barzakh as this something. The friends say, oh, he's a kafir. He sees heaven and hell as something else. He says, oh, he's a kafir. He sees Tawheed in another way. He says, oh, he's a kafir. They keep on, they don't understand, so they call him a kafir. Until 1,000 friends call him a kafir. And that was attributed to Plato. No, it's authenticity, we don't know. But Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, attributed to him is this. Inni la'aktumu min ilmi jawahira. Verily, I conceal the substance of my knowledge. He's concealing it. Kay la yara al-haqqa dhu jahlin fayufattituna. So that the ignorant don't become aware of it, because if they do become aware of it, yufattituna, they'll cut me to pieces. You see, وَقَدْ تَقَدَّمَ فِي هَذَا أَبُو حَسَنٍ. This was the case with Abu al-Hasan, Amir al-Mu'mineen. إِلَى الْحُسَيْنِ وَوَسَّى قَبْلَهُ الْحَسَنَ. How he instructed Imams Hassan and Hussein to act in such a way. وَرُبَّ جَوْهَرَ إِلْمٍ لَوْ أَبُوهُ بِهِ. there's so much ill that were I to disclose it, لَقِيلَ لِي أَنْتَ مِمَّا يَعْبُدُ الْوَثَنَا, it would be said to me that you're amongst those who worship idols. The ignorant, see, where ignorance can take you. وَلَا إِسْتَحَلَّ رِجَالٌ مُسْلِمُونَ دَمِي, Muslims would deem the spilling of my blood as legitimate if I were to tell them the layers of knowledge Imam Sajjad has. يَرَوْنَ أَقْبَهَ مَا يَأْتُونَهُ حَسَنًا, they would regard the most ugliest of actions proper when it comes to me, Imam Sajjad. In another tradition from the Ahlul Bayt, إِنَّ لِلْقُرْآنَ ذَهْرًا وَبَتْنًا, the Qur'an has an outer dimension, it has an inner dimension. وَلِبَتْنِهِ بَتْنًا, and every inner dimension has a further inner dimension. إِلَى سَبْعَةِ أَبْتُونَ, keep on continuing the same 7 times over. In some traditions it says 70 times over. In some traditions 70,000. There's no end to Allah's knowledge. So, I just wanted to explain these points because I think it's important. Remember the letter at the beginning, the first day that Imam said, this is the way to introduce Islam to the West. Inshallah you have a better idea of what Imam was trying to convey, inshallah. Okay, a few words of musibat and then we'll end, inshallah. We have abundant references in the Shia traditions and in the Sunni traditions that they're so abundant that it leads to uncertainty. Now, today I want to go through 5 or 6 different Sunni authoritative references, highlighting the things that happened after the demise of the Holy Prophet. Malik, who is one of the heads of the 4 schools of jurisprudence in the Sunni world, he has a book called Muwatta. And in Hadith number 545, it's narrated that أَنَّ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ تَوَفِّيَ يَوْمَ الْإِثْنَيْنِ, the Holy Messenger died on a Monday. So the 28th of Safar that year was a Monday. وَدُفِنَ يَوْمَ الثُّلَاثَ, the Holy Messenger was buried on the Tuesday. وَسَلَّ النَّاسُ عَلَيْهِ أَفْضَاذًا, and people prayed there at the grave separately for Adar, according to him. I want to go day after day, just analyze the events. Only a few companions were present in Saqifah, and those who were present gave allegiance to Abu Bakr on the same day. And this is on the 28th of Safar. In Sahih Bukhari, Aisha is narrated as having said, لَقَدْ خَوَّفَ عُمَرٌ النَّاسِ, Umar scared the people in Saqifah. وَإِنَّ فِيهِمْ لَنِفَاقَ, and the people were afflicted with nifaq as a result of that. So they went and gave allegiance quickly. In the history of Tabari and Ibn Athir, on the same day, 28th of Safar, they say, فَبَايَعَهُ عُمَرْ وَبَايَعَهُ النَّاسِ, Umar gave allegiance to Abu Bakr and the people gave allegiance to Abu Bakr. وَقَالَتِ الْأَنصَارِ, then the Ansar said, those who became friends, the Medinans in Medina, when the Holy Prophet made the migration to Medina, they said, أو بعض الأنصار, or some of the Ansar said, لَا نُبَايِعُ إِلَّا عَلِيًّا, we're not going to pay allegiance save to Ali. And then it was decided to get, on the 28th of Safar in Saqifah, it was decided then to get Ali's allegiance so the rest will follow peacefully. On the 29th of Safar, Tuesday, now this was the day of the burial, There were no traces of Abu Bakr and Umar at the burial. Two references. One is early 3rd century after Hijrah, Ibn Abi Shayba. He narrates from Ibn Numayr, who narrates from Hisham Ibn Urwa, from his father, who said, "Anna Abu Bakr wa Umar lam yashhada dafna Nabi." Abu Bakr and Umar were not present at the burial of the Prophet. Kano fil Ansar. They were with the Ansar. They had this other agenda that they had to achieve. فَدُّفِنَ قَبْلَ أَن يَرْجِعَ. And the Prophet was buried before they returned. That's in Hadith number 37,046. Ibn Hanbal, one of the heads of the schools of jurisprudence, in his Musnad, he narrates from Aisha as having said, مَا عَلِمْنَا بِدَفْنِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ حَتَّى سَمِعْتُ سَوْتَ الْمَسَاهِي مِنْ آخِرِ اللَّيْلِ الْأَرْبَعَى. We had no knowledge of the burial of the Holy Prophet until I heard the noises of the spades on the eve of Wednesday, meaning that Tuesday night. Also on the Tuesday, what happened was Abu Bakr was taken to the mosque, officially recognized as the Khalifa, and those who don't pay allegiance were politically threatened. On Wednesday, the 30th of Safar, some reports say it was the first direct threat to Ali's house, which was realized on the 30th of Safar. There were many direct threats, comings and goings to the residence of Ali, but the first, according to many scholars, was on the 30th of Safar. Before that, Ali alayhi salam, Lady Fatima alayhi salam, on the 20th and 29th would make these night rounds, going to people's houses, doing Amr Ma'ruf, reminding people of their rights. Ibn Qutaybah, who I recited from last night, also who died in the 3rd century, he describes these night rounds in his book Al-Imama wa Siyasa. And he says this, وَخَرَجَ عَلِيٌّ كَرَّمَ اللَّهُ وَجْهَهُ. Ali left, may his face be dignified. We explained that last night, what that meant. يَحْمِلُ فَاتِمَا بِنْتَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ عَلَى دُبَّةٍ لَيْلًا. Ali left, sitting Fatima on a four-legged creature, and the two of them left at night. Where? Fi majalisil ansar, to the houses of the Ansar. Tas'aluhum an nusra, requesting their assistance and help. Fakanu yaqulun. So Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, Lady Fatima alayhi salam, they're making these night rounds, reminding people of what the Prophet said, who should be the wali after him. He says these to the people, and then فَكَانُوا يَقُولُونَ, the people replied, يَا بِنْتَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ, O daughter of the Holy Prophet. Now Amir al-Mu'mineen was there, Lady Fatima was there, but they addressed Lady Fatima alayhi salam. She was a divine figure. She looked like the Prophet. She would talk like the Prophet. Amir al-Mu'mineen was it. He addressed the Holy Lady. Ya binta Rasulullah. This is Ibn Qutaybah saying this. Qad madat bay'atuna lihadha ar-rajul. Our allegiance to that man, referring to Abu Bakr, has passed now. It's over. We've done it. This is on the 30th of Safar. Or after the 28th rather. وَلَوْ أَنَّ زَوْجَكِ وَابْنَ أَمِّكِ سَبَغَ إِلَيْنَا قَبْلَ أَبُو بَكْرٍ مَا عَدَلْنَا بِهِ. If your husband, referring to Amir al-Mu'mineen, if your cousin, your paternal uncle's son, if your husband, if your cousin had come to us before Abu Bakr had come, we wouldn't have reverted to Abu Bakr. Now, look how Amir al-Mu'mineen was feeling in front of Lady Fatima, these people speaking in such a manner. فَيَقُولُ عَلِي كَرَّمَ اللَّهُ وَجَّهُ. Then Ali had to defend himself. Ali looked upon Lady Fatima with high esteem. Ali said, أَفَكُنْتُ أَدَعُ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ فِي بَيْتِهِ. Should I have abandoned the corpse of the Prophet in his house? لَمْ أَدْفَنْهُ. Should I not have buried him? وَأَخْرُجُ أُنَازِعُ النَّاسِ سُلْطَانَ. And rather debate with the people concerning power and authority. فَقَالَتْ فَاطِمَة. Lady Fatima put Ali's mind at rest. She said, مَا صَنَعَ أَبُو الْحَسَنِ إِلَّا مَا كَانَ يَنْبَغِي لَهُ. That which he did, which came from Amir al-Mu'mineen, was befitting for Amir al-Mu'mineen. He did the right thing. However, وَلَقَدْ صَنَعُوا مَا لِلَّهِ حَسِيبُهُمْ وَطَالِبُهُمْ. They too did something in which Allah will suffice, vis-a-vis their being summoned one day. In another tradition, also from Ibn Abi Shaybe, who died in the year 235, hadith number 37,045. أنه حين بويئ لأبي بكر بعد رسول الله. When Abu Bakr was being given allegiance to after the Holy Messenger, كَانَ عَلِيٌّ وَالزُّبَيْرِ يَدْخُلُونَ عَلَى فَاطِمَةَ وَيُشَاوِرُونَهَا. These are Sunni references. You have to be blind not to appreciate the status of Lady Fatima. When he was given allegiance to Abu Bakr, Ali and Zubayr entered the presence of Lady Fatima and consulted with her. See? وَيَرْتَجِعُونَ فِي أَمْرِهِمْ. Then they returned doing their own matters, which was trying to guide people on the right path, reminding them where wilaya is. فَبَلَغَ ذَلِكَ Umar. Umar got to know of this. فَجَاءَ إِلَى فَاطِمَة. And went to Fatima. فَقَالَ. Umar said, يَا بِنْتَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. O daughter of the Messenger of Allah. وَاللَّهِ. I swear by Allah. مَا مِنَ الْخَلْقِ أَحَبُّ إِلَيَّ مِنْ أَبِيكَ. There's no creation more loving to me than your father, Umar said. وَمَا مِنْ أَحَدٍ أَحَبُّ إِلَيْنَا بَعْدَ أَبِيكَ مِنْكَ. And for us, there's no one more loving after the Holy Prophet than you. وَأَيْمُ اللَّهِ. I swear by Allah. مَا ذَلِكَ بِمَانِئِ إِنْ اجْتَمَعَ هَؤُلَاءِ النَّفَرُ إِنْدَكِ أَنْ آمُرَ بِهِمْ أَنْ يُحْرَقَ عَلَيْهِمُ الْبَيْتِ. But this will not act as an impediment for me, that when those people, Ali and Zubayr, come to you again and assemble there, it won't act as an impediment for me to order the burning of the house upon you all. فَلَمَّا خَرَجَ عُمَرْ جَاءُوهَا. When Umar left, those two, Amir al-Mu'min and Zubayr, and maybe others, they came. فَقَالَتْ. Lady Fatima said, تَعْلَمُونَ. Do you know that أَنَّ عُمَرَ قَدْ جَاءَنِي. Umar came to me. وَقَدْ حَلَفَ بِاللَّهِ. He swore by Allah. لَإِنْ أُتُمْ. If you were to return here and assemble here, لَيُحْرِقَنَّ عَلَيْكُمُ الْبَابِ. He most certainly will burn down the door. وَأَيْمُ اللَّهِ. I swear by Allah. لَيُمْذِيَنَّ مَا حَلَفَ عَلَيْ. He will execute that which he swears by. Balodhuri, who died in the year 279, an authoritative Mu'tazilite Sunni, whose books are very authoritative. In the book Ansabul Ashraf, he said, Inna Abu Bakr arsala ila Ali yuridul bay'a. Abu Bakr sent someone to Ali. He wanted allegiance. Falam yubayi. Ali didn't give allegiance. Faja'a Umar wa ma'ahu fatilatun. Umar came, accompanied with a burning fire. Fatalaqathu Fatima alal bab. He encountered Fatima at the door. Faqalat Fatima, yabna al-Khattab, aturaka muharriqan alayya babi. I see, O Umar, I see that you want to burn me on this door. You want to burn this door with me here. Qala, Sunni reference, Umar said, Na'am, yes. وَذَلِكَ أَقْوَى فِيمَا جَاءَ بِهِ أَبُوكَ. This action will indeed strengthen your father's religion. Another scholar, Shahristani in Al-Milal wa-Nihal, narrates from Naddam, early 6th century. He says, إِنَّ عُمَرْ ذَرَبَ بَطْنَ فَاطِمَا يَوْمَ الْبَيْعَةِ. Umar hit the stomach of Fatima on the day of allegiance. Hatta alqat al-janin min batnaha, until the fetus was aborted in the womb. Wa kana yasihu, Umar cried out loud, ahriqu daraha biman fiha, burn the house down with those in it. Wa ma kana fi dar, the historian says, no one was in the house except Ali wa Fatima wal Hassan wal Hussein. And finally, the Zahabi's teacher by the name of Juwaini, very, very extreme Sunnis, what they've said against Ahlul Bayt, but even in their sources, look what they've said here. This was written in the early 8th century. Here he recalls the prophets foretelling what was to happen to Fatima alayhi salam. Now this is now a tradition from the Holy Prophet that Juwaini is saying. So the Prophet said, Wa inni lamma ra'aytuha, whenever I see Fatima alayhi salam, ذَكَرْتُمَا يُسْنَعُ بِهَا بَعْدِي, I recall that which is to occur to her after me. كَأَنِّي بِهَا, it's as if I'm seeing it, the Prophet is saying. This is during the time of the Prophet. It's as if I'm seeing it. وَقَدْ دَخَلَ الذُّلْ فِي بَيْتَهَا, wretchedness, it's as if I'm seeing it, wretchedness will enter the house. وَانْتُهِكَتْ حُرْمَتُهَا, her sanctity will be smashed. وَقُسِبَ حَقُهَا, her rights will be usurped. وَمُنِعَتْ إِرْثُهَا, her inheritance will be suppressed. وَكُسِرَ جَنْبُهَا, her side will be broken. Wa asqatat janinaha, her fetus will be aborted. Wa hiya tunadi, the Prophet is saying, as if I'm seeing it, and she will cry out loud, Ya Muhammada, fala tujab, but she won't be answered. Fatakuna awwala man talhiquni min ahli bayti, she will be the first of my Ahlul Bayt who will join me. وَتَقْدِمَ عَلَيْهِ, she will join me in a state of مَحْزُونَةً, grief. مَكْرُوبَةً, oppressed. مَقْمُومَةً, saddened. And مَقْتُولَةً, martyred. أَلَا لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ عَلَى الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ. وَصَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَعَلَى آلِهِ. A few doors to end. Oh Allah, we're all sinners. Forgive us our sins. Strengthen us against all satanic temptations. Guide us on the right path. Enlighten the souls of our friends and family who have passed away. Hasten the advent of the 12th Imam, our Savior of mankind. Help all oppressed people against the oppressors. Strengthen the Muslims against the forces of global arrogance. Bin Nabi wa Ali Salawat.